Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official proceedings, each Wednesday, I ask a question of the community and including the folks in this room. The question is, how are the children? And the reason we ask that is because we know that when children and young people in our communities are cared for, they have a roof over their heads, that they have caring adults in their lives, and they have a quality education, that they will be successful human beings. And each week, we invite folks in to talk with us. We have two very special guests today. The first is Celeste Jackson. She's a senior at Jefferson and is the class president, senior class president at Jefferson, and a member of the mediation team. And Tyrone White. Tyrone is the student body president of Jefferson High School. He's the captain of the basketball team and an honors student, which earned him the Howard Cherry Award that goes to student athletes who excel in academics as well as their sport. So Celeste and Tyrone, could you please come forward? They also have some supporters with them from Jefferson. Could all the young people from Jefferson stand up, please, just to be recognized? Let's give these folks a hand. Thank you. So just identify yourself when you speak, and either one can start.
Okay, I'll start. My name is Tyrone White. Once again, I am the student body president at Jefferson. And on behalf of Jefferson High School, I would like to thank you guys for giving us this opportunity to be here. And I would like to thank you personally for picking Jefferson to put your office in for a week, because not only does it help us, but it brings, you know, more of our community to our school. So to the left of me is my cousin, loved one, Celeste Jackson, and I'd like to pass it over to her.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Celeste Jackson once again, and I'm a senior at Jefferson High School. I'm also president of the senior class. There are four academies at Jefferson High School, and I'm a student in the Science and Technology Academy. I'm also a member of the Jefferson High School Action Team. This is a group of over 20 Jefferson students and teachers, school administrators, parents, community members, and local business owners, and City Hall staff who have been meeting over the past 3 months to plan for Jefferson for January 14th through 18th, 2008. This is the week of Mayor Potter will be moving to his office into our high school. I'm here today to thank Mayor Potter for responding to our invitation to bring City Hall to Jefferson, but also to make sure that each of you also spend time with us at Jefferson during this week. We need you to come to Jefferson and meet us in person. We need you to come to Jefferson and hear our voices and get to know us. We need you to come to Jefferson so we can, We need you to come to Jefferson so we can get to know you as well. We want you to teach us about our government and tell us how we can turn an idea into law and how we can express our opinions in a way that will make a change, or how we can become leaders and sit in your seat one day. The Jefferson Action Team has been working hard to create an exciting week of events that allow us to listen and learn from each other. You will receive a detailed schedule and events next week, and we hope you will make room for Jefferson in your schedule. I am also a member of a group called REAP, Reaching and Empowering All People. I am here on behalf of all the students of REAP, many of who are here with me today, which includes Cherie Bull, Cherise Mafita, Sydney Brazil, Noah Nelson, Sydney Nelson, and Brandon Dean. We want to bring your attention to an event we are organizing for the first day of the Mayor Week at Jefferson. On January 14, 2008, from 10 to 1, the REAP students invite you to a student-led tour of the school, a student showcase, assembly, and listening circles. Although we understand this is a big time commitment for you, we hope you will make time to join us to see the real Jefferson. Although we want you to hear our voices and to understand that we have a voice that is worth listening to. We want you to get to know us and then help us problem solve about how we can overcome challenges and meet the goals we are striving for. We hope you can make it. Here is a written invitation and details of the special events that morning. Thank you very much for this time, and I look forward to seeing you at Jefferson.
Thank you, Celeste and Tyrone. For the general public, not only my office will be moving to Jefferson for that week, and I'll be holding meetings there, and on Friday I'll be delivering the State of the City speech on behalf of with the City Club at Jefferson. So it's going to be an exciting week. These young folks have a really fun, full-packed week for people. I know that most of the commissioners have committed that they will be out there at various times to meet with you. We're going to have a parent night also, and at least one game, I understand, that we're going to be attending. So hopefully we'll have lots of participants. And I think, Celeste, you really hit it on the head, is that we can learn from each other on this. Mm-hmm. And I think that to see the real Jefferson, people are going to be so impressed. When I was out for the REAP awards, I was just so impressed with the quality of the young people. Jefferson is a great school, and it's got great students and a great faculty, and I think you've got one of the best principals I've ever met. So thank you very much. Any comments from any of the other commissioners?
Well, I see some familiar faces in the group. I was principal for a day at Jefferson, and I'd concur with the mayor's comments that Jefferson is on the rise, and I'll be out there as well, so I look forward to seeing you.
Yes. Thank you. Let's give our Jefferson folks a good hand. Thank you. Now, you folks from Jefferson don't really have to stick around for the next hour and a half or so, unless you want to learn a little bit more about civic government. But
might get used to it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 1425, request of Tom Feely to address Council regarding recognizing City Fleet as ninth best fleet in North America.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Tom Feely, the Office of Management and Finance. We're here to briefly celebrate a very important achievement on behalf of our city fleet operation. They've been named the ninth best public sector fleet in North America by Government Fleet Magazine, ninth out of 38,000 public sector fleets in North America. So this is a really great award. We were in the top 20 last year, but the top 100, excuse me, but we made number 9 this year, and our goal is to do even better next year. And I just want to point out John Hunt's former fleet at City of Fresno is number 7, so we definitely want to knock them off next year. But this is testimony to our John Hunt, City Fleet Manager, as the catalyst for significant change at City Fleet, as well as the men and women of City Fleet, many of whom are represented today. They're hiding in the back right now, though.
Tom, just a minute. Could we have those folks stand up? These
sure.
are the folks that made it happen. Could all right. the City Fleet people please stand up and get a hand?
I just want to tell you some of the criteria that were used in the award determination were accountability, use of technology, collaboration, staff development, a quick and efficient turnaround. You've got a copy of the article in front of you, as well as a press release and an announcement of the open house at City Fleet tomorrow from 11 to 3. And just finally, in the award itself, the little notable accomplishments listed by the magazine for Portland were monumental change is the City of Portland's most noteworthy achievement. In addition to process and operational changes, customer relationships were built by asking customers for a service evaluation analyzing the data, targeting large improvement opportunities, and building trust. So I'm very proud of them and the work that we've been able to do. I know 15 years ago I was a very unhappy customer, and I'm proud to say that our customers are reacting very positively these days, and I think really good things are happening. So I just want to give like 20 seconds to John to acknowledge his staff, and then we'll have the mayor present the award.
Yeah, just very quickly, I'd just like to say, Mayor and the council, I couldn't be any prouder of a group of people. I mean, coming here just cold, I mean, certainly I was told that a lot of things needed to be turned over and changed. And, you know, you really couldn't do the things we've been able to do in such a short time if we didn't have the staff that we have. And certainly with your support, we couldn't do the things that we've been able to do. I mean, just huge things. And we'd just dearly love to have you come out tomorrow during the open house and actually look at, the new fully automated fueling system, a new facility that we have put together for our body shop, and a lot of the newer technologies with computers and things that we have running, and just love to show that to you. So anyway, I just wanted to thank you and certainly thank our staff, and I'd love to have them all come up in front here, actually, and have them,
okay.
Have you shake
coming
their
up,
hand,
folks.
If you wouldn't mind. Come on up. They're the ones that made it happen, so love to have them come up here.
I'd like to point out that City Fleet is at 2835 North Kirby, not only inviting our city employees, but also the general public to come in and take a look.
Thank you very much.
Get our picture.
Appreciate your support.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's really cool.
Get everybody up here so we get everybody's picture.
Let's do it. Everybody's got to squeeze in a little.
Okay.
I
learned
to
fly,
but not that.
You guys are shy. But...
Come on, it's like a school thing.
Absolutely.
It's all bad. What's a labor city?
I think that they would have told me they're going to strike this.
Wow. It's your chance.
All right. I got you all.
Oh, really? Really?
Thank you all.
Who knows? She was pretty clear. I didn't think she was necessarily on that.
Right, she is.
You couldn't be lucky.
Yeah.
Please read the next communication.
Item 1426, request of J.D. Cook to address council regarding prevention of further bloodshed on our streets.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Hello, I'm Jeff Cook. Well, men, I played by your unconstitutional, un-American rules by which this body threatens to turn our city that we've come to love to call Little Beirut into Little Beijing, and I'm finally here to petition my government for redress of grievances. I cannot presume to speak for all 500,000 living souls in this city, my brothers, sisters, resident citizens, but I do say I will speak up for them. Today I come to complete the journey that I began on the 31st of October, to speak for the dead. It's something I've seen again and again in my decade here in Portland, intersections after intersections, perhaps hundreds in all, throughout our city's residential neighborhoods in North, Northeast, and Southeast Portland, are absolutely uncontrolled intersections. Sadly enough, I'm not a professional researcher, but indeed I should not have to be such. But neither the police bureau who issued no citation nor the Oregonian, the so-called paper of record, could provide the least bit of information as to the names, not even the tools by which to find them. Instead, I rely on the memory of a fleeting article providing the pertinent facts. Here's what I recall. Here's where you turn to your hand in, your handout. About 2005, 2006, an elderly couple in a sedan, 25 miles per hour, a younger man in a pickup, 25 miles per hour, zero stop signs at that intersection. This is what happens. Two dead. Sadly, the names of these two souls are lost now in the mists of time, their voices forever silenced by a horrible event. One wag told me that in Seattle, everyone knows the law about these unsigned intersections, but I, for one, will never expect my fellow citizens, Portland drivers, to go around town with a Seattle attorney in the passenger seat. What this incident represents is the self-same thing, which is among the leading causes of accidents, now called crashes by the National Highway Transportation Safety Board. It is failure to signal, not on the part of the drivers, no. The failure to signal is on the part of this city. It is the same malignant negligence by which this erstwhile august body now has blood on its hands. The only certain detergent that must be applied to these bloodstains is the simple solution of signing every intersection, no matter how low use the streets, no matter how unimportant the neighborhood. When at last, men, you have done the right thing, I will be among the very first to leap the walls and swim the moats and come to tell you, well done, thou good and faithful servants. But until then, every time I hold audience with you, not you with me, just by my sight, you will understand that it's time for another trip to the woodshed. Thank you. I will be back.
You want to take the sign with you?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I thought you may need it for future reference. Thank you.
Please read the next communication.
Item 1427, request of Marianne Schwab to address council regarding citizens voting for Portland for HDTV funding, Change the World, Start at Home.
Good morning.
That's a hard act to follow. Greetings, gentlemen serving the council. My name is Marianne Schwab, civic leader, member of the Sunnyside Community Renovation Committee, made up of three board of trustees from the Sunnyside United Century Methodist Church and the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. Did you know that on November 12th, hgtv.com/changetheworld, Comcast Channel 67, nominated 10 cities in the United States to be possible recipients of their Change the World, Start at Home competition? Portland is one of those 10 cities. If Portland wins, we will be able to do three things. Renovate the community annex located adjacent to the big church built in 1910, where the Children's Club, a daycare center, is now located in the basement. This historic 1922 building will get a new roof, the chicken wire windows replaced, these 14-foot ceilings painted. We're really excited because this is where the children play during rainy weather. Currently, there's 9 buckets up there collecting rain on the hardwood floors. The second phase will rehabilitate a craftsman house for a special needs family. Third, we will actually construct an outdoor classroom for Portland Public School Sunnyside Environmental School to augment their horticulture program. Anyone who's been around 34th and Southeast Salmon Street have seen the beautiful gardens and the work that the children are doing. All three projects are located in inner Southeast Portland. HCD will announce the 5 winning cities during the Rose Parade in Pasadena on New Year's Day. For details, again, contact hgtv.com/changetheworld and vote daily until December 21st. Everyone I've spoken with in the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association and Southeast Uplift Coalition are delighted. We hope that Portland will be one of the 5 winning cities. Again, please vote daily until December 21st. Each of you present here and those watching the City Council hearing can truly make a difference in the lives of children living in Portland simply by voting. How did Portland get selected? Last summer, I contacted Mike Malone with Rebuilding Portland Together for permission to use their volunteer liability waiver. Community volunteers subsequently applied 100 pounds of plaster to the broken lath, used 80 gallons of recycled Metro paint, and replaced 220 missing floor tiles. The broken windows were still on our list. Michael asked to see the historic building because he was aware of an HGTV was searching for cities to join their contest. Other good news, last summer, in response to the Children's Club state recertification requirements, the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association Board and Chores Lawrence with Lawrence Convalescent Home donated $800 to purchase 3,650 floor tiles. Now for the bad news. Don Lansing, Lansing Linoleum, reported due to the water rain overflow 3 years ago, the adhesive under the 1950 tiles has been compromised. He recommended could not recommend putting the new 12-inch tiles until the abatement team removes the old tiles. It's costly, $2.50 a square foot. We're asking, we're begging, we're pleading with people with their kicker checks and their open hearts to please donate as little as $250 per square foot. And I'm just counting the days until New Year's Day. Again, vote HGTV. .com, change the world, because in the meantime, in our basement, we have all these umbrellas keeping the rain out of the gym floor. Thank you. Any questions? How are the children today? They're wet up in the gymnasium. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. Is that it?
That's all the communications, yes.
Okay. We'll move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Does anybody in this room wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain. Shall we read them all together? Well, let's go ahead and just take one at a time. Item 1428.
Adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the minor supplemental budget for the fiscal year 2007-08 fall budget adjustment process and make budget adjustments in various funds.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm Casey Short, financial planning manager. We're here to act on the fall budget monitoring process action that we do this time of year. The bump adjusts budgets with a decrease or no change in appropriation or the minor supplemental budget, which is funds that increase by 10% or less. This year, there's a total of $54 million in 19 funds. The largest change is in the general fund at $32.7 million. Other significant funds with changes are the Federal Grants Fund, the General Reserve Fund, Housing Investment Fund, and Parks Capital Fund. We also have in the fall bump performance reporting based on last year and how things are going so far this year, which is included in the large report that we provide for you in conjunction with the fall bump. It's about 200 pages. It's a big thing, but it does have a lot of very good information in it. The focus of the bump has been on the general fund, where there was an additional $6.7 million available above what we'd budgeted in beginning balance. The council agreed to set aside 25% of that for a capital project. The capital project was a continuing contribution to replacement of the computer-assisted dispatch system at the Bureau of Emergency Communications. That was about $1.7 million. That's going into the general reserve for the rest of this year. We also found another, not found, but there was an additional $750,000 available in a transfer from the Housing Investment Fund. And the remaining money, some $5.7 million, was available for the council to fund programs. We do have an ordinance that reflects the decisions that have been made or the discussions that have been made to date on that. Some of the larger items include $816,000 for the Bureau of Housing and Community Development for several different projects. Also includes another $200,000 for shelter beds in BHCD. There's $710,000 for the Project 57 Voluntary Substance Abuse Treatment Project, some of which will go to police and some goes to BHCD. And there are numerous other programs and individual projects that are being funded here. That's about it for my overview. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I would like to note that we discovered a technical error yesterday in the appropriation in two of the exhibits, actually, for the general fund contingency. We filed a substitute with the auditor's office yesterday to replace those two pages to reflect the actual amount of contingency rather than an inflated amount that we had listed prior to that. So with your forbearance, I'd appreciate a motion to substitute the replacement that should have been distributed to your offices yesterday.
Was that on 14, 28, or 29?
28.
28, okay.
On the minor supplemental budget for the general fund.
So this action restores $1.8 million to the contingency.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Following the council's commitment to do that in the budget process last year at adoption in June for the 07-08 budget.
I would move the substitute language.
Second.
Call the vote.
Okay. Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Any questions on 1428?
Yes. Actually, not so much questions as clarifications, particularly on the police 006 service coordination team. I just wanted to, there's been some confusion and misunderstandings, including with myself, about the impact of the reduction of the request that was originally $840,000 that's dropped to $376,000. And this is on the service coordination team, which is the program that supplements Project 57 and is intended to be the effort to effectively replace what the drug-free zones were doing with actual real treatment of the offenders versus moving them to another neighborhood. So in conversations I had yesterday, I asked that somebody from the police bureau be here so we could get on record what these numbers represent and why they can accomplish what they say they can accomplish with this drastically reduced amount, and then maybe set the stage for the upcoming budget request. So I see Lene is here
and Mike.
Mike, whoever they think.
Please come forward, folks. Assistant Chief Lene Berg.
I also see the guys that are on the ground doing it here. I don't know if they want to come forward as well. Maybe I could set the stage for this a little, Mayor.
Sure, go ahead.
So when the drug-free zones were not renewed by the council, of course, each of us got various amounts of feedback. And some of my friends in the police bureau were less than pleased that not only that I supported eliminating the drug-free zones, I actually pushed for it. And the reason was because nobody ever adequately explained to me how a prostitute that's told can no longer be a prostitute between the intersections of 102nd and Sandy and 122nd Sandy just doesn't move to 135th and Sandy or to 17th and Sandy and perform prostitution. And the same goes for drug dealing and buying. So in my view, it was a program that made those people feel pretty good that lived within the boundaries, but it did nothing to actually address the issue of prostitution and drug dealing citywide. So all of a sudden, somebody would be excluded from a drug-free zone in a certain area of the city, and then we'd start getting complaints here from wherever they moved to. So for me, it really wasn't effective. It moved the problem around. So I asked my friends in the police bureau that instead of being angry with me for voting for this, help me come up with a program that actually deals with the problem. And to their credit, Mayor Potter, and to your office's credit, that's exactly what this program does. This is intended to build on the excellent results that we've seen with Project 57, whereby the city rents jail beds from the county, 57 jail beds, and we use those to get individuals' attention who had gotten nothing more than a citation and just blew the police bureau and the justice system off, now end up in jail and are given an option to go into treatment beds. Well, what we found is that while we have enough beds to put people in, we don't have enough treatment beds then to refer people to, so these offenders that are reoffending, particularly the ones that were the subject and the object of the drug-free zones, walk out and continue to reoffend. This program is designed to replace what it was that the drug-free zones did. And so my concern is that we give you, the police bureau, the resources necessary to do that. And so when the original request came in at $840,000, I understood that $840,000, that did that. And then it was reduced down to $376,000, and I became concerned that we didn't have the resources then to actually replicate what the drug-free zones did. In a conversation I had with Lene yesterday, at least emails, she told me that you do think that you can cobble other resources together, and I wanted to get that on the record. And then so when we talk about this in the upcoming budget, council members don't think that because we only approved $376,000, that's what you needed for the program, that it actually is money that you're using from other areas that do that. So if you could explain that, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Lene Berg, Assistant Chief Operations Branch. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today. How we're filling that gap with internal resources is, with 44,000 that's coming back to the Bureau from the codes hearing office.
And just to be clear, the gap between the 376 and the 840.
Yes.
So you need the 840 for the program.
Yes, it's for the overtime money that was cut. So that'll meet part of the gap. And then an analysis of the money that council gave to the Police Bureau for backfill for the crisis intervention team training. We haven't used it to the extent that we thought we would, and we think there's about $100,000 of capacity in that fund that will bridge through the end of the fiscal year for the overtime to allow officers to give focused attention in the areas where this is going to be implemented. Okay. So next year, when we ask in the budget for the upcoming 07 or 08-09, we'll be asking for that money because these resources will be gone.
Okay, good. I just wanted to get that clear so the folks here understood what we were doing. And then the other thing, I wonder if it'd be appropriate, but just briefly, to kind of explain what we are buying for this. I had the opportunity to go with Mike Reese and Matt and Jeff over to Volunteers of America, who is the group we're going to be contracting for this particular treatment service. For they deal with the, as I understand it, the most hardened drug and substance abuse and even those involved in prostitution. Is that right? And it was pretty impressive what you're planning to do with that. So maybe you could just let the council know what we're going to be getting for this.
Certainly. I really think that all the elements of this program are the hallmarks of good public policy because we have a systematic approach to what has been a difficult population to serve and impact. So there will be day treatment at Volunteers of America, which will allow for 30 placements currently, and then we'll look to see if that's enough capacity. It'll allow for expansion of the housing rapid response with Central City Concerns, which will allow for some what they call dry beds, which is alcohol and drug-free housing, as well as some temporary housing for folks who are in the day treatment. It allows for a parole and probation officer who will be focused with a caseload of the folks that are identified as chronic offenders, an additional district attorney to help us move some of these cases forward throughout the system, and then a program manager who will be the person who will coordinate what has been on the shoulders of Central Precinct for VSAT and P57 and now is going citywide to sustain it and coordinate and make sure we're good stewards of the funds and the programs. We need somebody to coordinate that. And then overtime money to be able to focus attention on chronic offenders 24/7.
And, of course, again, the idea is that is to build on the success of Project 57 and to remind the council and those listening, since we've instituted the program Project 57, where we actually put people in jail that otherwise used to get tickets and hook them up to treatment, we've seen the top 300 offenders in Portland, who are the ones that are in the system, burglarizing, robbing, selling drugs, victimizing people, the recidivism rate, the rearrest rate, dropped 71% as a result of this exact same program. This allows us to expand it and actually get to a tougher population that is the core of a lot of the crime that occurs. And so, I mean, this is just one of the best approaches, I think, that we could take versus just throwing people in jail and throwing away the key or hiring more police to arrest people. It actually gets to the core issues of why they're offending. And as a result, we've seen crime rates in Portland drop. And I think a lot due to you guys' excellent work using this program, so I really appreciate it.
And I would just like to remark that we really see issues around public safety issues around this as a shared responsibility. And there is a component in this project for involvement with the neighbors, neighborhoods, businesses to do some problem solving around all of these issues with neighborhood watches, foot patrols, and other strategies.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Matt has anything to add.
Well, and I know that there's a tremendous amount of responsibilities on our shoulders with this money you've allocated. I think holistically, every Monday we sit down, the police, the DA, the jail, parole and probation, treatment providers, Cascadia, the whole range of services, and we work collaboratively together to do the best we can to fix people. some people need to be in jail for a while to get the message. Some folks, after they cleaned out, dried out, and are receptive, we help them get into housing, help them get employment, and help them beat their addictions. And most of these folks aren't just a single addiction. It's alcohol and drugs and or mental illness. Very difficult people to help. But we've been successful in doing that, and we'll continue to do so as best we can.
And it's no coincidence that Sergeant Matt Ingen and Officer Jeff Myers are here today on Project 57 and also are the two officers that consistently sit in our housing interdiction task force that goes after these really bad misbehaving single-room occupancies, hotels like the Grove. They were both the initiators of both of these programs. And so there are two outstanding officers, and I really appreciate your work a lot.
And your
guys' support of them has been fantastic. And it's been noticed. Thank you very much.
And in the service efforts and accomplishments that just came out from the city auditor's office, it noted that Portland was one of the few large American cities that crime is continuing to go down in, while many other cities are going up. I think these kind of strategies make a huge difference. Everybody in policing understands that drugs drives crime in Portland. So the more we can eradicate the need for drugs, the more we eliminate crimes. And so these are the kind of programs I think that's going to really do well for our community and the police bureau into the future. So thank you, folks, for what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you don't mind, I wanted to point out one other thing. I wanted you to see what you're buying for the $244,000. Carla, if you'll put that up on the screen. For the $244,000 allocation for 24-hour restrooms. I previously passed this out to the council, but hopefully we'll see here on the screen a design.
Mayor, I didn't know you wanted us to still lobby our request.
Well, I want people, sometimes the public doesn't understand what it is. This is more.
We know you're misunderstood often.
Thank you.
Yeah, pretty heavily. The found that he had all kinds.
That's interesting.
I'm hearing voices. I don't know about you.
Increase your medication, Commissioner Adams.
Вижу плачущий зал. Все смарт.
I'm hearing Russian now. What's the frequency, Kenneth? You could hold it up.
We could all hold ours up.
You might have to. Sorry, it's not coming up there.
Yeah. I just wanted the folks at home. Can we get the camera to zoom in on one of those? So what you're buying for those is as many of these restrooms that we've had designed by the same designer that's worked with the SAFE Committee in designing restrooms from them, as many of these European-style restrooms as we can possibly produce for $244,000, and we're hoping four or five, and to have them installed in areas of Old Town and downtown that will serve the populations there the best. And some of those are populations that currently, frankly, don't find restrooms and relieve themselves in particularly Old Town. These are designed to be small, compact, non-attendant required. They've actually been designed with some input from the police. You'll notice on the bottom there are louvers so that they're angled in such a way you can't look up, but the police can look down and see how many legs are in there. If there are more than two legs, then the police have reason to be concerned. And they're also designed to be washed from the outside so that you'll know there they are. Thank you. And you'll notice that underneath they're open, and the idea is to not make it as private as some restrooms are for security reasons, and then also to allow the crews that will clean them to clean them from the outside. And so they should be easy to maintain. You'll notice on the door our designer has incorporated some uniquely Portland features. This one's a picture of the steel bridge. And so we're actually hoping the one thing that will happen that you're not seeing here is to have a solar panel on top that will charge during the day and illuminate the restroom at night in the evening hours. So
that's great.
I'm hoping you'll see the first one of these shortly after the new year in Old Town, and then shortly after that, as many as we can buy for the money you've generously agreed to support today for the downtown area. Thank you.
Other comments?
I have a question, maybe of Commissioner Adams, or I see Sue Keels here also. In a discussion I had recently with Bill Hoffman and Roland Chaplowski from your office about the enhanced Burnside Cooch fallback option, the enhanced Burnside option, excuse me, there was discussion about a project manager being hired in January to oversee that work. And I guess I'm curious, is that money in this bump, or is it otherwise being taken care of?
Well, the council set money aside for both the preferred alternative, the Cooch couplet, and then also enough to complete the initial design work of the enhanced Burnside Cooch. So my understanding is we have the resources at hand to begin.
It's on there.
Oh, it's in here.
Because if I might, Commissioner Saltzman, okay. There is $129,000 in the bump ordinance as it is before you for the West Burnside project.
Which I was told, I was told there was going to be a project manager for the enhanced Burnside. I assume that's one of those positions?
Yes. Okay. There is a project manager also being added to PDOT's employee list, authorized positions list, among a number of positions that are being added in PDOT. I don't know for sure that that's for that project, but I expect that it is. I think I've looked at that, and I know there are folks here in PDOT who could answer that question.
It is.
I see heads nodding behind you. So. Okay. Thanks.
Other questions? Do anybody sign up to testify on this matter?
We have one person signed up, Michael Daner.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Michael Daner. I'm with La Una, Local 483, and I wanted to appear here today to address one small item, not unimportant to my folks, which is the proposed elimination of a permanent full-time position in the parking meter technician classification. Cutting this position would be short-sighted and detrimental to the city's economic vitality for 3 reasons. The parking meter system is growing, the meter shop is badly understaffed and has been for some time, and the position is essential to protect the city's investment in its parking program. The parking pay station system has been and will continue to be in a state of constant expansion. The city has funded 7 meter technician positions since 2002 or so, but since that time, the parking pay stations have expanded into OHSU, Pill Hill, South Waterfront, the Lloyd District, the Bus Mall, and the North Pearl District, to name a few examples. Additional projects are already planned for Southeast MLK and Northeast Broadway and Widler near Lloyd Center. In addition, there's an abundance of construction downtown, as you all are well aware, and that is not going to end anytime soon. That construction does have a direct and substantial impact on the meter technician's workload, with a constant reshuffling of machines being broken out, moved, and reinstalled due to construction. Despite this growth, the city has understaffed the meter shop for several years, and the meter technicians have been expected to do more and more work with less and less resources. Based on the current inventory of parking meters, including the single space units, each meter technician is responsible for approximately 350 meters, or the equivalent of 350 meters each, not to mention providing customer service for all users of the parking system. Currently, meter technicians are frequently working through their lunches and breaks, despite my counsel to the contrary. because they are dedicated to providing the level of customer service that the public expects and deserves. To compound this critical understaffing of the meter shop, there likely will be another retirement of one of the senior of six meter technicians within a year, and history has shown that it generally takes as much as 2 years for a new hire to reach journeyman status in this highly technical position. For the past several years, the meter shop has carried a vacant position which was sorely in need of being filled. The position now proposed to be cut represents approximately 15% of all the funded parking meter technician positions. It's one out of seven. And in fact, this should have been filled long ago. Indeed, a recruitment was undertaken and a candidate previously was selected for this vacant position, but at that point, a decision was suddenly made that position was suddenly determined. It was suddenly determined that the position would not be filled, and the candidate was not hired. This decision was made at about the same time that the Bureau of Maintenance directorship was split from one position into two full-time co-directors of that bureau. The parking meters are an extremely important and rich revenue source for the city. Anticipated 07-08 revenue is projected to be somewhere around $13 or $14 million. And according to binding city policy, TRN 3.102, quote, the first priority for meter district revenues is to pay the capital and operating costs of the meter system, end quote. This includes the cost, quote, to operate, manage, maintain, and enforce the system, end quote. It's penny-wise and pound foolish to cut this one meter tech position, and I'm very concerned that is part of the package now before you.
Thank you. Is that the only person?
That's all who signed up.
Thank you. Any questions from the council? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Thank you for everybody for the excellent work ideas that went into this proposal. I think in total this proposal makes Portland a much more livable city and addresses some real fundamental needs. So I really appreciate all the hard work that's gone into this from all the council offices of the mayor and the staff. Aye.
Saltzman?
This is 1428.
Yes.
Aye.
Stan?
I also wanted to say I think this is a good package. It's, I think, strategic investments into things that are ongoing projects as opposed to starting new things. I appreciate the focus on prevention and response as a different approach than the drug-free zone. I think it will actually be harder, but I don't really believe the drug-free zone was working. And to the extent that it was working, it was pushing the problem from one place to another, and that's perhaps better than nothing, but I really like the attempt to aspire to actually solve some problems, get some people off of the street. Not unrelated to that, although they're completely different issues, is there's continued investment in the homeless strategy. There's a very small grant that I think will be very important to try and help people get onto disability more quickly. One of the things we're finding is that people on the street are often eligible for disability, and it's a two-year process to get there. And so that will help a lot. We made an investment in self-enhancement. I see Tony's here that I think we wanted to get to in the last budget and didn't happen, so I feel good about that. That's long before we get to any of these other problems, is trying to invest in our children. So I think this is a great set of investments. Also mentioned the transportation projects and the some of the sustainable work that Dan's doing. So I think this is a good piece forward. I want to thank the mayor for leading the charge and vote aye.
Potter.
And likewise, I think that our staffs did a stellar job on this, and I want to thank the commissioners. This was a collaborative effort, and that people may have questions about how the money's being distributed, but I think that the word from this side of this podium is that it's being put to things that are going to empower and make our communities better. And so I also want to thank on my staff, Ingrid Fish and Austin Raglioni. I thought they did a superb job, and they stuck with it, as did the other council offices, till we came to this. And so I appreciate that effort, And I think this is a good model on which to begin to look at our 08-09 budget as well. So I vote aye. Please read 1429.
Adopt the fiscal year 2007-08 fall major supplemental budget in the amount of $76,678,593 and make budget amendments in 11 funds.
Casey Short again. The major supplemental budget is different from the minor supplemental budget that the council just voted on, in that state budget law requires a distinction between the two for any fund that increases its appropriations by more than 10%. We had 11 funds, as Carla mentioned, that met that threshold for a total of $76.7 million. The principal difference here is that a hearing is required by the Multnomah County Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission. That hearing was held last Thursday, and we have received a letter this morning from TSCC attesting to the fact that the major supplemental budget is in order. The 11 funds involved in the major supplemental budget include the sewer operating fund, which is the largest here, of $41 million, largely for carryover of funds to continue the big pipe project, which ran into some troubles with the boring machine. We understand that much of the time that was lost back in last fiscal year has been made up, and we're projecting that by January it'll be back completely on schedule. The Transportation Operating Fund is the next biggest at $20.8 million. The majority of this, some $17 million, is to recognize proceeds from a bond sale. The other funds include solid waste management, taking funds from contingency to start implementing the Portland Recycles Program, Hydropower Operating Fund to do an unanticipated repair at the Portland Hydro Project up at Bull Run, carryover of funds in the Housing, Community Development, and Home Grant Funds, and there are five Urban Renewal Debt Funds that are in the major supplemental because tax increment revenues were up more than anticipated, so we have to recognize that additional revenue, be able to pay the debt, and make that money available for urban renewal projects at PDC. That's all I have for a presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Nope.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
We have one person signed up, Michael Daner.
I will stand on my prior comments unless there are any questions. Thank you.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter that did not sign up? Call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I did want to remark perhaps more accurately on the previous ordinance, but I wanted to commend everybody who worked very hard on this this fall bump, including our chiefs of staffs, and I know they worked hard to get a package we could all support. I'm very pleased to state that OMSI in return, well, not in return, but as a token of appreciation for the money we are giving them, has agreed to provide five OMSI camp scholarships per year for 3 years to children in foster care. So I wanted to thank OMSI for that commitment. And I'm also pleased that Self-Enhancement will be receiving money. They're also going to be further targeting getting children in foster care into Self-Enhancement programs with this money. And it's a great package, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Sven.
Well, again, thanks. I did want to thank Jim and my office, who worked very hard on this with the rest of the team in the building. And, you know, I guess I would say, in summing it up, I think this is, of all the packages I've seen in a while, perhaps the one that is most focused on causes of what's going wrong. And I think that's the right approach. Aye.
Potter.
My statement from the previous stands, I vote aye. Please read 1430.
Transmit fiscal year 2008-09. General Fund 5-year financial forecast.
Last item for me today. We're moving from actions in the current fiscal year to the projection for the coming fiscal year. I'm pleased to report that the financial forecast for fiscal 2008-09 reflects the fact that Portland's economy continues to be doing quite well. We're able to note increases in all the four major revenue categories: property tax, business license, utility license, and transient lodging. This all translates into an increase above last June's forecast of $7.9 million in ongoing funds and $13.4 million in one-time revenue, which is added to the $13.1 that we projected in June for a total of $26.5 million. We expect to be available for the Council's consideration in the 08-09 budget process.
So 26 one-time, and what was ongoing?
$7.9 million.
$7.9 million. When's the next update?
There will be an update in March just prior to the mayor's proposed budget.
Thanks.
With me is Drew Barden, the city economist, who I think has a few more explanatory comments.
For the record, my name is Drew Barden. I'm an analyst in financial planning. I'm just going to go over the briefing sheet that we did separately with all of you. In this forecast, revenues are up substantially. That's because the economy is good, and in addition to business license, transient lodging, and even utility license fees being up, property taxes are better in this forecast because we had a very good year this year.
Could you remind the viewers and us how property taxes increase above forecast given Measure 5?
The way that property taxes increase beyond the 3% on existing properties that's allowed under Measure 4750 is through new construction. And for the current year, we had a substantial amount, a little over 2 percentage points, of new construction outside urban renewal districts, which increases a fixed rates tax levy, such as the general funds levy. We haven't had anything like that in the past 4 years. We've been bumping along at right around 3% or a little bit less. So there was quite a bit of new construction, which in essence moves the whole revenue line up as you start off from a new base, which is kind of what you would expect to see in a cycle like this at some point. The assumptions that underpin the forecast are for CPI, for COLAs, and healthcare, which are standard assumptions. The healthcare assumption comes from AON. The CPI is our best estimate of what the February number will be. The difference in this forecast versus the previous one is that the city's last best offer to the Portland firefighters has been included in or sequestered in the forecast and set asides, and that is $2 million in 08-09, rising to $3 million ongoing in 9-10. Requirements are a little bit higher in this forecast due to inflation, the inclusion of the LBO, and archive debt service. But the sum total is like Mr. Short said. We think that in splitting the amount of resources available above current appropriation level requirements can be split into about $7.9 million ongoing and $26.5 million total one time. The risk to this forecast is that the cycle that we're in is getting long in the tooth. And it's obvious to everybody that that's the case. The principal risk is recession. Like we said in briefings, everybody expects a recession, but nobody is formally forecasting one. The news that keeps filtering in is very mixed. It's hard to tell whether there is just going to be a slowdown in growth or whether problems with the oil prices around $100 a barrel, the subprime problems, geopolitical problems, and falling dollar are just going to push the economy over into recession. The other risk to this forecast would be an adverse arbitration decision with PFFA. If an arbiter were to award PFFA's last best offer, there would be a substantial increase in ongoing beyond what is in the city's last best offer, and that would reduce to $7.9 million. We still don't know exactly what the last best offer from PFFA looks like. We're still costing it, but it is substantially above the $3 million. I'd be glad to take any questions that anyone has.
What's the formal definition again of recession?
Two quarters of negative GDP growth in a row.
I thought a recession was when your neighbor was out of a job, and a depression is when you're out of a job.
Anecdotally, that's what people say.
But I do think that it's important to note that economic models just simply are built on a cycle. And as I recall, Econ 101, they're about 7 years or so. So it isn't like you're predicting something that isn't going to happen. I mean, it is a normal part of the economic cycle to have recessions and then come out of recessions and have boom times. And I've been disturbed for some time about the length of the growth of the economy, as I know a lot of people on the national scale are, particularly with the amount of credit that consumers appear to be relying